This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
Okay, now the recording's in progress.
There it is, yes.
Wow, technology, not our friend again tonight.
No.
So this is Best of the Rest, take two. We've already wasted about 20 minutes tonight starting this thing off, and I thought we had some pretty good stuff there, but I guess we're going to have to remember what it is. So I think in this episode we're doing listener questions and what have we read this past 3 to 4 weeks? Because it's been a while since we've recorded. You've been on vacation, I've been traveling, and here we are again. Let's see if we remember how to do this.
Yes, luckily the last episode we recorded was, we talked an hour and a half, and we were able to get Sparky, the genius that is Michael Sparkman, was able to get 2 episodes out of it, so that covered our hiatus, somewhat hiatus that we were on. So, but yeah,
it's not a hiatus if you plan for
it. That's true, absolutely true. But yeah, I solicited our Discord chat group today for some, you know, asked if there was anything they wanted us to touch on or had any questions, and they stepped up, and we've got several things to discuss.
Well, we got some stuff to discuss. Whether or not it's worth discussing is a whole other thing.
Well, when did we ever let that stop us? I mean,
so this is true. All right, so let's see our first question from our listener. Do you feel that the Big Two are unwilling to take risk on doing something different and staying with tried and true with Rebirth and Legacy? Of course, what's the Big Two got to do with independent comics?
Well, we can make it fit. It's like we're assuming here that we can make the question that the question is, do you feel that the Big Two are unwilling to take risks on doing something different, unlike indie comics? So we can add a phrase in there, and now it fits. It ties in real well.
Oh, okay. I can agree with that.
So we can make anything fit. Like you said earlier, you can fit a square peg into a round hole.
Oh, yes. It's just how creative you got to be. All right. So what's your thoughts on the question? What about the Big Two? Are they unwilling to take risk? Do indie comics only take risks now, indie companies?
I chatted direct message with Aaron Bell a couple minutes on this earlier, and I'm not so certain. I'm not sure that the Big Two, Marvel and DC, are unwilling to take risks as much as they're just doing what their readership wants.
Yeah, I can see that. I've kind of got the opinion that, comics are a business, and you kind of look at the Big Two as your established firms, and they're executing. So they've got tried and true product. They know the product that their readers want. All they have to do is execute and give what their readers want. And, I mean, you're not trying new things or really, well, I don't want to say new things. You're not trying out of the box thinking on anything, because why? You've got a business, you got a model. It's been working for 50, 60 years. It's making money, however that is. You don't have to discover anything. That's kind of why I find it interesting. Like, I know with DC, with the metal, and I think spinning out of metal, or is it spinning out of Doomsday Clock? They've got these new characters that I've been seeing ads for.
Right.
And when was the last time a new major character actually took hold in either of the Big Two? I mean, you just don't see it. I mean, they've got their established players. And now I think like the indie comics as more of your, you know, your startup ecosystem, or they may be a product looking for a market, or, you know, it's the entrepreneur or whatever looking for what the market wants. So they're going to do experiments because they don't need to execute. They need to find out what's not being served by the big two.
Right.
And then that's why you see them experimenting and doing stuff, because, you know, they can't just churn out the same thing the big two are. That needs being satisfied. It's a commodity, right? So it's all on margin, basically.
Yeah, and you know, a couple of examples that I can think of where DC did sort of try to do something different. This is pre-rebirth, it's sort of at the last year or so of the New 52. They had a couple of titles. One of them was called Midnighter. And it featured this character, superhero, that he's sort of been recycled. He's been in the DC universe for a while. But he's this character, a lot like Batman in a way, sort of a vigilante. He doesn't have a lot in the way of superpowers. But in this rendition of him, the last series they did, the guy, he was openly gay. It wasn't overt. They didn't make that the point of the series, but that was just a factor of his. It was a damn good series. Nobody bought it. Another one was Grayson, where they took Dick Grayson and took him out of his Nightwing, made him a secret agent. You know, so he's not in a costumed hero. He's not a cape and cowl figure anymore. And that was pretty well written, I thought. But again, it wasn't. People just didn't buy into it. It's like, no, Dick Grayson, that's Robin or Nightwing. So DC has done a couple of things, I think, that tried to get outside of the typical irv of what they do, and it's just not, people are just not buying into it.
Well, is that because the people that would buy to it don't think to go to DC or Marvel?
Possibly.
You know, you know what you're going to get with DC. Basically, you know what you're going to get with DC and Marvel. So, I'm not going to expect anything new and fresh from them, so I'm not going to go in looking for it. I'm just going to expect the same old, even when they introduce a new character.
Well, if that's true, then you kind of blame that on Marvel and DC for not promoting that or disseminating that information that we've got this new character out there. But you know, I don't know. It's really complex, and I don't begin to understand, you know, the demographics of why people read certain comics. But I think I think you're right that most people, they think of DC, you know, it's Batman, it's the Justice League, it's Green Lantern,
the other thing too is, with any writer on any of those big two characters, when they're done with them, they have to put the toy box back how they found it. It's like you can't really have an everlasting change on any of the characters because they kind of got to remain the same as they have for the past 30, 40, 50 years.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, there are certain characters that are fairly untouchable. Batman being probably the prime. I mean, you know, as far as things that change, they don't let you mess with Batman much. Although Martin would disagree that Batman has not changed much. But, there's still certain parameters. But, yeah, you're right. You cannot just completely rewrite the history of a Batman or Spider-Man or any of those characters. You can play with them, but there's certain things you just can't go out of. You can't go out of the...
And that's the nice thing about indie comics, or, you know, aside from the big ones, is because, you know, the creator owns them, they can do what they want with them, and if they want to kill them off, they can kill them off. They don't have this need to have this constant income stream from the characters. I'm sure they would like it and all that, but, you know, what you find out is, like, more the independent guys, they want to tell a story, And a story has a beginning, a middle, and most importantly, an end. And you don't really see that with the big two. It's continuous stories now. Some of them, like in Marvel and Moon Knight, takes 10, 12 volumes to keep that story going. But, you know, there's several. You know, the indie comics usually, there's an end someplace in sight, whether it's 60 issues down the road or 6 issues down the road.
Right. Yeah. I agree on that.
So, I mean, I guess to answer the question, from my point of view, is there different business models in indie comics from the big two? And they're trying to appeal to different consumers. One wants the constant. I want this character to last for, you know, the next 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, and I want the same stories over and over, just different perspectives. And then there's others where it's like, you know, this is a finite story, and the characters either have their happy ending, or everything's resolved, or they all die. Story over, move on to something else.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a succinct way of putting it.
And I do think the big two have messed around with trying to do that, but they don't do it in their main universe. Like, you know, my big thing back in the day was DC's Vertigo. So you had Sandman, which is a finite series. You had Preacher, which is a finite series. Why the Last Man, that was a finite series. Sweet Tooth was a finite series. Lucifer, that was a finite. None of the titles in there, with the exception of maybe Hellblazer at the time, seemed to be an ongoing that just kept going and going and going.
Right.
And now Hellblazer is in the main DCU. On the Marvel side, I think they've tried some of that stuff with back in the day with Icon. And I really don't know any other imprints with Marvel, maybe, that had finite series that were a little bit longer than your 6-issue, 12-issue miniseries?
DC, you might say that, you could say that DC's kind of doing that with their Young Animal imprint. Some of those,
mm-hmm.
With Shade, The Changing Girl, and Mother Panic, those are not your, you know, short finite series. I don't know how long they've planned on running some of those titles, but that's an area where they're taking a little bit of, you know, stepping out, doing something different. And it's been moderately successful, but from what I've seen, just the numbers I've seen. More so than...
Yeah, but isn't there something, some initiative coming out where either DC or both DC and Marvel are going to start doing more... I don't know quite what the word is, but doing... like trades without doing floppies or doing stories that aren't set in the main universes, but they're, you know, limited and contained to try to kind of appeal to what a lot of the independent comics are doing?
I've heard rumblings along that line. I have not found out any specifics because I just haven't researched it, to be honest. But yeah, I keep hearing noise of that sort.
So I, you know, I guess when we're coming down to it, I think they are unwilling to take risk in their main universes. And I guess it's kind of unfair because we mostly talk DC, not much of the Marvel. I think Marvel is their big play right now is they're trying to tie their cinematic universe back into their books because that's where most of their exposure is. So people see the movies and they kind of expect that in their comics. And I don't know how well that's translating.
I don't either, and because I mean, and honestly, I don't read a lot of Marvel. I'm more familiar with DC and what they've done. So, a reason I haven't spoken much about Marvel is I just don't know too much about them. So.
Yeah, and I don't know if there's much about like the whole diversity backlash that they've kind of, you know, you've heard rumblings about for the past several months. You know, getting rid of old characters and having new, younger characters, diverse characters in there. You know, that's kind of why they're doing Legacy now, to bring back the old characters. I don't really know if that's it. I mean, just to kind of give a history, when New 52 was going on, I think I tried it out, but by 6 months in it, or six issues. I think I had dropped just about every DC book. I think I took Batman up to issue 12. And then after that, I kind of like, I wasn't getting any DC. So I was predominantly, you know, getting Marvel stuff.
Right.
And, you know, and I think Valiant was going along at the time, and a little bit of Image. But, I mean, that's when I was reading more Marvel and stuff. And I loved Marvel in the 90s. I was reading it in the early, you know, in the 2000s. But I don't know at what point it just kind of lost me. And I don't know if it was the constant retreads of stuff. And maybe that's why they, you know, maybe that is Marvel taking a risk, sitting there and bringing in the young, diverse characters that they tried to. Now, maybe the execution wasn't quite there. But, I mean, you know, they got rid of Tony Stark and put in Riri. You know, you got Moon Girl coming in. You got, you know, they got rid of Fantastic Four after Secret Wars. You know, the Falcon became Captain America. So, Jane Foster became Thor. So, I don't know. That's kind of, that has got some risk there now that you think about it on those characters. You're taking some of your core characters there and just totally up and changing them.
Right.
But I guess that may be the case of the risk of going too much change from the, you know, based on some of the backlash they've gotten.
Right, but it hasn't been a complete backlash. I know, for example, Thor is still was still a rather popular title. I think people fairly well accepted, you know, the female in the role of Thor. And that may just be because Jason Aaron is such a damn good writer that.
And maybe that's it. If you've got the right story, you've got the right writer, you can take risk.
Right.
So maybe you take risk, but it's got to be calculated risk, planned risk, and you just got to, you know, execute it and pull it off.
And the thing that I heard as far as what people were saying, now what people say and what they actually believe are often not the same, but the way people were, the people that were, you know, speaking out against that, they were saying, you know, we're not against diversity per se, we just don't want it shoved down our throat. And that's what they seemed to be thinking, that they were, Marvel was just kind of cramming this down their throat as far as, you know, some of this diversity. And I don't know, maybe it was a little heavy-handed, or I don't know. Like I say, I don't, you know, for me, I don't, you know, there's certain things that, you know, I don't mind changing things up pretty radically.
Well, I don't mind either. It's just got to be executed. So, you know, just to give some examples, and, you know, these are more historical ones. So, you know, the traditional original Robin was Dick Grayson.
Right.
And right now, we're on our fourth Robin. And I think there was only one Robin. I think there was only one change in that where the fans didn't care for it.
Yeah, with
Jason.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to remember, you know, I was actually reading some stuff about why, one of the things, they just kind of made Jason like a moody version of Dick Grayson.
Right.
Or something like that. And people didn't like it. It's like, not my Robin or whatever. But, you know, but then again, they also included the fans in that because that was the famous telephone in to, you know, have him live or have him die.
Yes.
But you know, one of my, you know, my favorite Robins, actually Tim Drake, who's the third one. And then you got Damian, and I'm really liking Damian. So, you know, now they weren't just brought in and within like two or three issues, they'd replaced, you know, replaced the old Robin. You know what? I guess we're on our fifth Robin because, I can't remember her name right now, but Spoiler was actually Robin for a little bit too.
Right.
Yeah. For about five or six issues.
He was.
After Tim Drake. So, but I think that is a good demonstration of how you take a character and you either update them or you bring in somebody, you know, they kind of move off and then a new individual comes in and takes over the role of that persona. You know, Kyle Rayner, I liked him as a Green Lantern. And, you know, that was... Now, that did happen a little bit more quickly in Green Lantern when that happened there in the mid-90s. So, that was a little bit more abrupt. But I don't think it was, you know, shoved down our throats.
No. In the same way with even, you know, the iconic, untouchable Batman. You know, when they did... When Grant Morrison wrote Batman R.I.P., you know, they quote-unquote killed off Batman. And then for almost a year, Dick Grayson took on the role. That didn't bother me at all. In fact, I think some of the best Batman stories that I can think of. The Black Mirror, which was the last 10 issues of Detective Comics before New 52 that Scott Snyder wrote. One of the best Batman stories out there, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, certainly a top 10 for me. And I didn't mind that at all. If they wanted to completely eliminate Bruce Wayne, kill him off permanently, and give it to Dick as Batman, I would be perfectly fine with that. Not a problem.
Yeah. And I guess the other example I have from DC is when Wally West took over for Flash from Crisis on Infinite Earth. And that was done during an event, but it all made sense. And for the life of me, I can't figure out what the difference is. Would be. Why hasn't Marvel been able to mimic that?
I couldn't tell you. Could not tell you.
And you almost got to wonder, is that because some of the DC characters have been around since the 40s? So they've got that extra 20 years on the Marvel characters that came out in the 60s?
There may be something to that. Definitely more legacy. But they've also got more convolution, too, because, you know, because of those characters have been around for so long. They went under so many different, you know, the famous, all the different versions of Earth that they got out there that they had to write an entire event, Crisis on Infinite Earths, to try to get rid of all of that extraneous stuff.
Or is that a case of where they've prepped their readers for different versions of characters? Because, you know, you had the multiverse and then the Elseworlds. So DC characters, you got used to being different versions of them. Like you had Batman and you had Gotham by Gaslight with the Victorian Batman. You had Red Sun with the communist Superman and the Freedom Fighter Batman. You've had Red Rain, where it was the vampire Batman. So DC kind of prepped you for, here's all these different versions of the characters. You know, some of them may be Bruce Wayne, some of them may be his father, some of them may be another, you know, somebody that was inspired by Bruce Wayne, but now he's Batman. So now you've kind of primed the pump where you can see different versions of these characters, and so if they do it in the main continuity, it's not quite a shock.
I don't know, and that brings up something I don't know. You may be able to say better since you're more familiar with Marvel, but yeah, does Marvel have anything akin to like the Elseworlds that DC does?
Well, the Marvel Universe, main universe, was 616, and I forget exactly when and where that came up, but I really don't think that it might. I don't know if that came up before the Ultimate Universe or not. But the only what Marvel had was, I think, was a lot of alternate futures, and the X-Men were notorious for that. So you had, you know, Days of Future Past, Days of Future Present. For the X-Men, all these, you know, all these alternate realities, and that got to be with the X-Men, what they were trying to prevent, this future that was coming. I know there were several Avengers minis or events where they were doing stuff in the future. The other thing I saw a lot with Marvel that you didn't see in DC outside of Green Lantern, was there was more of a cosmic element to Marvel. You know, you had these entities like Galactus, the Beyonder, Ego, the Living Tribunal, The Stranger, all these cosmic characters. So their universe has actually expanded a lot outside of the Earth. I mean, how many different races, alien races, can you name for Marvel? You got the Kree, the Shi'ar, the Skrulls, and some of the other entities I mentioned. And then you go to DC, and you don't really have a cosmic element to DC outside of Green Lantern. It's like the Earth in Marvel interacted with the greater universe. And DC, I think, you know, they had the New Gods, and then you got the Source and the Source Wall, blah, blah, blah. But then, you know, some of the aliens, they're not really, you know, memorable.
Right.
And they're all in Green Lantern. I mean, you had Kryptonians because you got Superman, and I think where you would have seen that with DC would have been with the Legion of Superheroes. But after the 60s and maybe the 70s, there was a de-emphasis on the Legion. And the thing with the Legion was 90% of them, you couldn't tell the difference in the aliens, you know, from Earthlings, right?
Right.
They just look like humans, except they were on a planet where they all have magnetic powers, or they're all on a planet where they have psychic powers, or they're all on a planet that has lightning powers. But they all look... they could pass for human.
Right.
Where it's very different in Marvel. So I think to kind of get that diversity of stories for DC, they did Elseworlds, and in Marvel, all you had to do is go to a different planet or set it in space. But it was all in the same universe. And you just had the same characters interacting with different characters in the same universe, so they were the same, as opposed to being different versions of the same character.
Okay. Yeah, I agree. I think I see what you're saying.
So,
anyway, that's a lot of interesting stuff. So, a lot of it came
out. So I think it's a simple question, but I think it's a complicated answer. And you know, I think what drives it most is the business model.
Yeah, I tend to agree.
They know what their readers want, and if you know, why deviate from that? They're built to execute. Here's Batman. Here's his 70 years worth of history. Don't stray for that. Give me some Batman stories that people are going to buy.
Exactly. And that, you know, and that's what it all ultimately comes down to is copies sold. It's like, yeah, no, Batman's, you know, Batman is their tentpole title. That is, and they readily acknowledge that. So it's like, don't jack around with this and upset people, and then readership's going to drop off. So.
Yeah, and if you're an indie book, you have to take risk. You have to be different. You have to stand out to get people's attention.
And that's a good segue.
You know, that comes down to marketing.
Yeah, and that's kind of a good segue into the next question, which is really, I look at it as part B to the first question. And that was, are there any indie publishers that you feel are really taking chances with their lineups?
Now, are we talking superhero universes or just any collection?
I'm going to take this to mean anything.
Okay.
What do you
think? So, who do you feel is taking some chances?
IDW is taking a chance with this new Black Crown imprint
mm-hmm.
they put out. The first series that came out is this Kid Lobotomy, which there's been two issues of that. And I know you've read it.
Yes, I have. I have no idea what I've read, but I've read it.
Nor do I. Does anybody that I've talked to. I actually listened to another podcast called The Comics Alternative that they talk about independent comics too. And they did a review episode a week or so ago where they talked about Kid Lobotomy. And the two guys that were talking on that, we're of the same opinion. It's like we have no clue what's going on here because it is a really psychedelic, just very off the wall. And that seems to be in line with a lot of stuff. The writer on that is Peter Milligan. And I'm trying to think. I can't remember who the
of Shadow Man fame?
Yeah. Tess Fowler does the artwork for it. So Milligan, but there's a lot of allusions in that book to Franz Kafka, particularly Metamorphosis, which if you've ever read that book is really bizarre. That's the famous book where the protagonist, Gregor Samsa, wakes up one morning to find out he's transformed into a giant insect. So that book definitely informs what Milligan's trying to do with this kid lobotomy. And the main character is just really, he's mentally deranged in a number of different directions. And you really don't know in reading this, at least from what I was saw, you don't know how much of this is actual reality or how much this is going on in his head. It may all be going on in his head. And I'm not sure how I feel about it after two issues. I don't think I've seen enough to form an opinion one way or the other.
Yeah, I've just read it, and it's there's something going on, but I have no idea what it is. And yeah, it's just like you said, I don't know what's real and what's not real.
And the editor for this series is Shelley Bond, who was an editor at Vertigo for many years. So she's kind of, you know, been in the forefront of comics, of taking new directions, you know, to kind of get a little bit of stuff. So it's curious what they're going to be doing with this, because, like I say, this Kid Lobotomy is the first one out. And one that they're coming out with, I think, next month, earlier around mid-December, Assassinistas, which is written by Teenie Howard. But what really intrigues me is the artist on this is Gilbert Hernandez of Love and Rockets fame. And he rarely, rarely does collaboration with anyone else. He mostly writes his own books and works independently, even though he works on Love and Rockets with his brother Jaime. Their stories are independent. So he's very, you know, this is really interesting to me to see how this is going to work out.
Okay, yeah, I'm trying to think in my head who I think's taking some risk right now. I mean, IDW is doing that. I'm trying to gravitate towards Vault, but yeah, and they're just doing some different stuff. But I don't know if it's really out there for me. I kind of like the stuff that Lions Forge is putting out, but I mean, I think that's more good writing than anything that's risky or different from what I've seen before. I'm really liking their Magnetic collection, which is bringing over European comics. Maybe that's a risk.
I think so. I think it is, because you're talking, I mean, it's a low cost risk because they're not having to pay. They're just licensing previously published material. I'm not sure how much they're paying for those licenses, but it's not like they've got, you know, creators of staff that's working on this. But yeah, I mean, bringing European and foreign comics over to the United States in translation, I think you're right. I think that's definitely a risk. And it seems to be working out for them. They've got a couple of good titles. We talked about Jazz Maynard the last time we talked, and that's an exceedingly good title.
Yeah, I think the final issue of the first arc finally came out a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
I read it. Was quite enjoyed that series.
Yeah, that's a good.
Quite more than I thought I was going to, but it was quite enjoyable.
Right. I agree.
Ghost Money, I'm really intrigued about. That's still only two issues have come out?
Three. Third one just came out last week, I think.
Oh, I must have missed it. So I'm going to go hunt that down.
Yeah, I've got it on my pull list. I'm pretty sure it came out last week.
I don't know. Is there anything else in their magnetic collection? Is there that Ida?
Ab initio. I haven't read it, so I can't really speak to it. But you know, the
yeah, I haven't picked up any issues on that. But
I think there's one other that's escaping me right now. I can't think of the name of it. I'm sure somebody will let me know.
Yeah, but I'm really liking their magnetic collection and, you know, bringing over some European stuff. It's kind of refreshing, the pace of the storytelling. You get some dense parts in it, and then you just get some action with no words. So it's it kind of changes the pace on you. The art's great. They're doing it on premium paper and stock. So really quite enjoyable coming out of Lions Forge.
Absolutely. Which,
it's low risk, it's hedged bets, and I think they're using that to kind of help fund their superhero universe that they're building in the Catalyst Prime.
Right. Agree.
Which I'm thoroughly enjoying that. I mean, I'm liking that. It's just another superhero universe. I've been through quite a few of them. I've been through two Valiant universes so far, a Defiant. Cross-gen, Ultraverse, I'm trying to think if there are any others. the Milestone universe, which I think they're bringing back in DC. Then Alan Moore's universe that he had with the America's Best Comics, Tom Strong and all that. I think they're bringing that in, rolling that into DC. That's actually interesting because, we're getting back to DC now, but, DC, maybe that's where they're going to be taking some risk because they've sat there and they've got their main universe and they're going to be rolling Watchmen into it. They're going to be rolling Milestone into it, or it's going to be a different multiverse in their main universe. They're going to be rolling Tom Strong and Alan Moore stuff, more of Alan Moore stuff in there. If you go from metal, Sandman's appearing in there, so they may be rolling some Vertigo stuff in there.
Right.
So.
Question. I don't. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think. We were still thinking about publishers that are taking risks, and I don't know if this is a risk in the spirit that the question was intended, but Alterna, did that big launch of much of their titles, the printing and newsprint. And with prices that are $1, $1.50 an issue, would you consider that a risk of sorts? It's not a creative risk as far as, doing.
Well, but it's trying a different business model. Right. And trying a different business model is a risk.
Yeah, and in fact, they're actually.
So it's like you said.
They're actually going. Sorry.
Yeah. No, that's fine. Like IDW, they license properties usually. But now they're trying to build their own characters. So that's a risk for them. We're talking about Lions Forge. I think they did some property licensing, but now they're trying to create their own characters. And they're licensing previously published comics and bringing them in from Europe. So that's a different business model. And Alterna is trying to do a different business model based on the price point.
Yeah. Plus they're actually trying to get back into newsstands, just like the old days before the direct market. So that's another risk. And from what I am seeing, based on things on Twitter and what a little research, it's working out for them pretty well.
Yeah, but some of their titles I can't see sitting on a newsstand.
Well, they have, if you go and look at their website, they're titles, they put them under three different categories. All ages, which is really for kids, a young adult, and adult. I haven't been out looking to see what's actually in the newsstands, but I would say certainly the ones for all ages would be a good candidate for newsstand distribution. I'm not sure the adults ones would, but I don't know. They're doing.
Well, I do know I've heard recently that DC is discontinuing their newsstand issues. So I think up until about, I think newsstand issues came out maybe a month after the regular direct. And I know I think that probably ended maybe about 2 or 3 months ago. So it's interesting that they're doing that, but it seems DC's giving up on the newsstand.
Right. I want to talk to Peter Cimetti of Alterna, and I've actually communicated with him on Twitter, asked him if he'd like to come on and be a guest. He got back with me a few days ago saying he doesn't have an opening until mid-January, so I'm working on trying to get that set up, but it's going to be a while before we can have him on. But I'd really like to talk to him because I'd really like to hear some of his thoughts, especially on this business model of going with the newsprint, going with the reduced prices, getting back onto newsstands, you know, exploring different methods of distribution besides what's become the traditional, you know, the standard direct market into comic shops and mail distribution. So.
No, I guess the question comes, who's going to be the first one to go all digital and offer a subscription?
That's another good one. That's another good question. He's made some comments about that. I'd like to talk to him about that. So hopefully,
yeah, I think that's where, you know, I saw that.
Hopefully in the next couple of months we can have him on. I'm really working to get that because I'd like to hear his talk to him about all of those things.
All right. So anybody else taking any risk?
I'm sure there are. Nothing's coming to mind.
All right, let's see what the next question on here is. They're asking, how awesome is medicine? I have no idea, because I'm not reading it.
Nor am I. That's a digital-only distribution, isn't it?
You know, I heard somebody comment about that, but I haven't researched it, so I don't know. I've only recently kind of gotten to where I'm reading some digital stuff. I got introduced to this wonderful app called Hoopla.
Yes.
And it's like, I can get all this free stuff from the library to read.
Yes, that's a lifesaver as far as, especially if you're reading something that you don't necessarily think you're going to, not sure if you're going to like or not. I read a significant amount of digital, not all of it. But that's not the reason I'm not reading medicine, is because it's digital, but I just it hasn't gotten on my radar yet, so.
Yeah, I'm a traditional, I like to collect, so I kind of like to, I also like to have paper books in my hand when I read them. I haven't yet really liked reading books or novels off my iPad or Kindles or whatever. You know, it's kind of bulky when you get on a plane and everything like that, but I don't know. There's just something about feeling it. So I've been kind of the same way with comics, but, you know, comics are starting to get kind of expensive, and when you get 20 or 30 or pulling a month, it starts to add up. So digital may be a solution to that.
Yeah, especially kind of the stuff, because I'm, you know, the last couple months, just for the sake of the podcast, I've been pulling a lot of first issues of new comics. And that can really, yeah, that mounts up, especially at $3.99 a throw. So if I can get some of those off of Hoopla or some other source, then I'm going to do that. So.
Yeah, especially like the hard case crime books that are, some of them are like $5.99.
Right. And they are.
Which, do you think Titan doing that's a risk?
I don't know. It's certainly out of their norm, because they're a British company, published, and a lot of what they do is licensed, you know, they're doing licensed BBC programs, Doctor Who, Sherlock Holmes, a lot of stuff that's pretty easy to sell. So yeah, I think maybe you could say they're taking a little bit of a risk on that.
Yeah, okay.
Especially by the $5.99, a lot of them, but they're expanded content too. They're like 60 pages of content, so they're almost three times the amount of a standard comic book, which is usually 23 pages, 25 pages.
So what, comics need to start doing like you see on some of your packaging or at the grocery stores where you got the price, but then it tells you what the price per ounce is or the price per pound is? You know, comics need to have like $6.99 or, you know, 12 cents per page.
That might help. That might help. So, but
that way you can kind of compare them. But I guess my question is, so the books that's got the nice thick stock cover, and then you open it up, and then it's got the exact same cover, but it's the paper under there. Does that count as a page, or is that just another cover?
I don't know.
But yes, the Hardcase Crimes that are $5.99 with the 60-something pages are muy excelente.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying a lot of what they're doing. So if it's a risk, good on them, because...
Well, I guess just think of it. So, like, I know one that I finally got all the copies of and I sent to you was The Assignment. So it's only three issues. And that's what's been kind of throwing me off. It's three issues, and the three issues are each $5.99, but they're almost double or triple the content. So it's almost like six to eight issues in three issues.
Right.
And you do realize that's also going to be a movie later this year or next year?
I think it's
year.
Already out. I'm not sure. I know Sigourney Weaver is going to be is the lead in it. I don't know if it's out or not. I haven't followed up on it.
But yeah, with that extra content, it's great. But then I was thinking that I was kept looking for the fourth issue when I was looking for the third. I think I found the third issue. Well, I got the first issue, then I found the third, and I finally found the second. And then I started thinking I had to go look for the fourth, and it's like, and that was before I'd read the second and the third issue. So it kind of threw me for a loop, because you just don't see three-issue series.
Right. And that's kind of unusual.
So there was some confusion on my part and how they're doing
well,
it.
Well, and then with the other thing they're doing, they're doing that series of Millennium Girl. We talked about the girl with the dragon tattoo. That was only two issues, but it was expanded content, so it was closer to, say, four of issues. Then they followed that up with The Girl Who Played with Fire. That was also two issues, but double content. So, and I think there's a third one.
And then we're going to get the third book's coming out. I can't remember what the name of it is, but it's going to be two issues.
Right. I think it's the girl who handcuffed Houdini. I think is what it is. No, that's another book.
No,
you're right.
That's a period piece from like the 20s,
right.
I think.
I'm kind of confused. I can't remember what the third one's going to be called, but there is a third volume coming out.
Yeah, but we highly recommend.
Yes. Anyway.
But you don't see much press on that.
I
don't see it being out there as much as some of the others that like they're put like the Lion's Forge stuff or the IDW Black Crown.
Well, I don't see much press for anything that Titan does. You know, I see the Doctor Who and the Sherlock Holmes books on the shelf. I'm assuming they're selling just because there's a huge following for those shows here in the United States. But I don't know if it's because they're a British company and they're not doing promotion as much in the States. But I don't see a lot of press on them. You know, most of the information I get on them is out of previews catalog.
Yeah, they got a pretty thick, or quite a number of pages when you get to them in the previews. Because it's all the different versions. I think they got a comic series for every version of the Doctor, and we're up to, what, 13, 14?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
But that's their... The analogy of DC, that's their Batman character. I mean, that's Doctor Who's going to sell no matter what. Whether it's very good writing or very bad, I think it's going to sell. So, you know, good for them if it's out there making their revenue.
All right. And so let's see. The next question on there, are there any dead universes you'd like to see return and why?
You kind of touched on some earlier.
Well, we got Valiant back, so that's not quite dead right now. So I loved me some VH1 back in the day. But we got some Valiant goodness going on, so it's not quite dead. It's not dead.
Defiant?
Defiant was an interesting concept, but I'd have to see how they modernized it, because it's, if you go back, it's very 90s.
Yeah.
But it was an interesting concept. So have you read all of the Defiant? Well, basically, from what I recall, let me think. What had happened is Shooter was designing a universe based on psychoanalysis. So some catastrophe had happened to the Earth or the universe in the past. Right? And that's when you had this advanced civilization in South America, what the Aztecs are based on and everything. And somehow, and so in modern times you have the world of Plasm, and that is the id. I think it ended up being one of the main superhumans from that ancient past, and it was like her id took over. Right? And so the universe, and then you had another book that was based on the dark. Is the id the dark part of the subconscious or something? But you had the dark part that was this other separate entity, and then you had the earth, which was what was left, devoid of the id and the ego. I think that so it was kind of based on the id, the ego, and all this stuff, and then Shooter was trying to make it like the Valiant started out, where it was all based in real-world physics. So while it was superheroes, it had to be physics-based, not mystical, magical, or, you know, you could just almost believe it's like high science fiction or fringe science.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of how it was, and maybe you could modernize that. I mean, it's interesting to think about, but I just don't know how well it would translate.
I don't either. I'm not familiar, because I haven't read much of it. So. But I can't think of any dead universes other than that one.
Well, for me, if I could bring back one that's not currently publishing right now, and I would have to, and I guess I got a caveat why, it would be CrossGen. That universe died in the middle of their first, basically their crossover, their line-wide event. And they had spent 2 years, I think, building it up. And there were some really good books. I mean, that's where you first saw Greg Land, the artist. You know, he came out of Sojourn. And, the books were beautiful that he was doing then. But, you know, the concept was interesting, and, you know, you had this primal first race. Well, no, actually, what is it? You had the human race that had ascended and created this other race that thought they were the first race, and then you had all these other worlds with humans on it and creating conflict and energy, and then you had this negative universe. And they all had it all planned out, and it was all intricate. It had great artists. I thought most of the stories were good. And then they got to where the negative universe had finally built up enough strength for the fallen. I mean, it was all had, you know, the storyline about the, you know, the fallen angel, you know, Satan or whatever. So there was the basis of that. You know, they finally found their way to breach it, and they were coming in and invading our universe while the good side had been prepping, these unknown, you know, the warriors from our universe to combat them, and they had just gotten like to the second or third issue, and then the company just closed because they had kind of expanded their line. I don't know how many books at the time they had coming out, 12, 13. They had gotten too big too fast, but I really enjoyed the CrossGen universe, and I'd really at least like to see how that crossover event finished, because, you know, it's almost kind of like that was their whole phase one. Here, we're going to build up all this, have this big event, and then there's going to be repercussions that, you know, carry us forward. And you never even got through that. And I guess it's worse because it got right to the cusp where you needed another three or four issues, and you had seen the climax of everything they've been doing for a couple of years.
Interesting.
But I really like the cross-gen.
Good, good. Like I said, I can't... Because I've not really been much into universes, per se. Valiant was the first shared universe that I really took a lot of notice of. I never really got much into DC's shared universe because it was so damn convoluted. So I haven't had a lot of background in reading different shared universes.
Now, what do you consider, how many books do you got to have, or how many characters, or whatever determines that when you have a universe?
Oh, gosh.
Because I'm really liking that Black Hammer universe, but there's only two books.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know necessarily if I would put a number on it as far as books. I think it definitely becomes shared when the creators of one book have to take into account what the creators of the other book are doing. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't just completely, if you're creating a book, you can't just completely go off. Well, like Catalyst Prime, you know, the things that are going on in Noble can't be completely disjoint from what's going on in Excel and Superb and Astonisher. There's got to be some continuity on it. So I think that determines the shared universe more so than just number of books, per se. But I would think you need at least three or four to really start feeling like you're, you know, going beyond just a couple of related books. At least that's...
Well, what if it's an ensemble of, or a group book, and then you didn't have characters that kind of break off into solo ones? And the one I'm thinking about like that is Mignola's Hellboy universe. So you had Hellboy... And then you ended up having, you know, separate Hellboy minis, but then you had BPRD miniseries, or a series. And then from that, you had Abe Sapien, and then you had some earlier characters before Hellboy came around, of like Lobster Johnson, the Witchfinder, and all that. So now you've got different characters from different times in this universe and different books, so... But, you know, it all started out, so you had Hellboy and the BPRD, then Hellboy left, and so he's doing his own book. You got the BPRD doing their own book, and then you got separate characters from the BPRB doing their own books. I mean, they started out as a group in a universe in one book, and now they've got their solo adventures. Now do you have a shared universe?
I don't know. How do you feel about that? I don't read all those books. So I haven't.
I didn't really think of it as much until they started trailing the backstories, and you had like Baltimore, Lobster Johnson, Witchfinder. I think last month started Rasputin.
Yeah.
Who was the character that ended up working with the Nazis to bring Hellboy to the world. So... You're getting backstories on the main character.
Okay.
But it's all intricately tied, so it's not like you've got, you know, it's almost one story. Here's all the characters through this story and at different times. But is it not a universe because you don't have different characters with their own stories that kind of lightly touch on each other? I mean, they're all kind of intricately woven.
I would think you still have a shared universe. I would think you could classify that as that, as such.
Well, I guess you could say any book that's got a story is a shared universe. It just depends on if you're documenting it with one book or you're documenting it with more than one.
Right.
So, it's kind of an abstract thought that's kind of hard to conceptualize in the world of comics, I guess.
Yeah. It is. I mean, like I said, I don't know. There's really no definition of what that means. But
I guess the loosest one would be like the Stephen King universe, where, you know, he kind of, with the Dark Tower, he got his own little multiverse, and there's other worlds, and all his stories take place on different versions of the worlds and shadows of each aspects of each world touch on each other, but the characters don't really interact from one world where the story took, where one of his books were with another. So.
Yeah, I don't really. I'm not up. I haven't read all of King, but yeah, I'm not sure I would necessarily classify that as a shared universe other than, or just paying homage. Because, you know, another, like a writer that I definitely don't consider his stuff is shared universe, but it references each other, is Lemire, some of his books. Like in Royal City, he recently made a reference to Essex County, and Ronnie and I actually had a little bit of a discussion about it, because he was, you know, and we both agreed that it's not really a shared universe, it's more like, but it's interesting and kind of cool that it references each other, so that it's sort of some, not really a continuity, I wouldn't call it that, but, you know, it just sort of ties in everything in kind of an interesting little bundle.
Yeah, I can see that. Let's see. Next question. They'd like to hear our thoughts on First Comics. What are our thoughts on First Comics? What is First Comics?
That was a... Well, it's... That's a good question, because there was the original First Comics, which I think was in... published from 1983 to 1991 or 92. And now they... In 2011, they resurrected some of their titles, and they merged with another publisher. It's called First Comics now, but they put a numeral one in front of the word first. So I jokingly call it One First Comics, but that's... but...
Oh, okay, I see. They did American Flag, Grimjack, Nexus, Badger, Dreadstar, and John Sable.
I think Lone Wolf and Cub, didn't they? Didn't they get that from Dark Horse?
Oh... No. Were they the original U.S. publishers of the Japanese manga?
They may have been. I'm not overly familiar with them.
Because they didn't get through the full manga. Or is it manga? I don't know. I don't read enough
it's
of them.
It's either, whatever you want to say.
I did read Lone Wolf and Cub, but I didn't. I read it from the Dark Horse little minis as opposed to the floppies when they were coming out with the Frank Miller covers.
Right. But I know they went away and they came back as, you know, First Comics, but with the numeral one in front of it. And there's only been one thing that I have read out of within the last year was a graphic novel called Illuminati Transport. Which was, I reviewed it, I came across it when I was writing reviews for Outright Geekery, and that was one of the things I read, and I really enjoyed that. It's very occult-driven. It's about this guy named Jim Kowalski, who owns a trucking company called Illuminati Transport, and what he does, he goes to sites where a team has captured some sort of paranormal creature, occult being, and he picks him up. They put him in sort of a containment vessel, and he goes and picks him up and takes him to the warehouse or wherever they're disposed of. And he has a traveling companions of his talking dog named Geech and a crystal skull named Rico, who talks in English liberally mixed with Spanish slang. It's a black and white comic, monochrome, so that may not appeal to some people, but it was a really good story. It's written by two guys, the two brothers, the Philbach brothers, who actually wrote, I think they wrote the Star Wars clone stuff for Marvel. I have to look that up. Philbach Brothers. Yeah, they penciled the Dark Horse comics Star Wars Clone Wars Adventure Series. They were the artists on that.
Oh, okay.
Matt and Sean Philbach. And they've done a lot of, but they've also done some of their own creator-owned stuff. Captain Freebird, Maxwell Strangewell, Roadkill, which was the first where they introduced this Jim Kowalski, and then Illuminati Transport. So that's a good recommendation. I hadn't thought about that book until until Nick asked that question about first comics. But that's a good...
Yeah, I've read some Grimjack. I've always kind of liked Truman stuff, and I've enjoyed Grimjack. And I've heard good things about Dreadstar. Never read any of it. I've seen the character and everything, but you know it's Starlin, and I really like Starlin's 70s stuff with Warlock and Captain Marvel. Or Adam Warlock and Captain Marvel and a bunch of that early stuff he did. He basically is the one that built Marvel's cosmic universe in the 70s and kind of built the foundation for what everything is built today. So I really need to kind of check out Dreadstar. That's been on one of my lists too. And I really love Mike Grell. And I've read some of his John Sable. You know, I really like his Green Arrow stuff, but his John Sable stuff's pretty good too. So the other stuff I've read some Nexus by Steve Rude, and it's some stuff that's out of here. It's not quite as bad as Kid Lobotomy, but man, it goes on some tangents, but it's entertaining. I've seen Badger, but never read it. Just like I've seen American Flag and never read it, even though I'm a big Chaykin fan. I'm a big Chaykin fan for a bunch of his other stuff. His current stuff right now, maybe not so much. But yeah, he brought that up, and it looks like there's some other stuff I need to check out that they did in the past.
Yeah.
But I have read some of their stuff back in the day, and you know that's what indie was back in the mid '80s, late '80s.
And that kind of brings back, ties into, because Nick asked that question, and he was the one that Saturday night when we were talking, wanted us to talk about defunct indie publishers. And that's one of them, the first comics, at least the first iteration, that original iteration of them. Any other defunct?
Yeah, I know a defunct. Yeah, I really liked Sirius back in the day. Sirius, I think, started out with Dawn. I mean, well, Cry for Dawn was the first by Linsner. And I forget who was publishing that. But then he hooked up, and then he brought in... I can't think of... Drew Hayes to do Poison Elves. And that was my big indie comic in the... for me, in the mid to late 90s, was Poison Elves. And... So you were getting Dawn miniseries and Poison Elves. I don't know if I was really getting anything else from Sirius, but I really liked their stuff. I know some other. I mean, The Crow was who first published The Crow? I remember reading some of that, maybe that was like totally. Self-independent thing. Caliber Comics. No, that was Caliber. And let's see, what else did Caliber have? And it ceased publishing in 2000. So... I'm really not seeing anything else they did that... Oh, Madman. Mike Allred's Madman came out of Caliber. I've tried to read some of that. Philip Hester's Fringe.
Ah.
I'm not really seeing much else. Ed Brubaker's Lowlife. So that must have been some of his early work. Uh, not really seeing much else. So that was Caliper. Comico. Did you ever read anything from Comico?
One that I thought of was Now Comics.
I don't know if I've read anything from
that. That's all caps. N-O-W. Now Comics. They published from about 1985. I think they went defunct in 2006. And they mostly licensed things from Columbia Pictures, which is now Sony, CBS Entertainment. Some of the titles they published were Speed Racer and Racer X, which is a came off of that. They did Alias, Ghostbusters, The Green Hornet. Their funniest title was Married with Children. I didn't even know that was a comic book. I just never saw that, but that's pretty funny. But I was surprised to find out this Now Comics, some of the talent that they had working for them. Listen to this list. You may recognize one or two names that worked for Now. Harlan Ellison, Neil Adams, mm-hmm. Jim Steranko, Bill Sienkiewicz, Jeff Butler, Chuck Dixon, and Alex Ross. In fact, it says Alex Ross did his first professional comic work for that company on the title
Burning Earth.
You got it.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize that was Now.
That was one that I thought of.
All right. So I'm looking at Comico, and that was actually Matt Wagner's Mage. Grendel came out of that. But so did Evangeline by Chuck Dixon, his first comic writing venture with co-creator Judith Hunt Pencils. The Comico also did Elementals by Bill Willingham, who I think of Fables fame. I think that's who that is. Their first license was Robotech back in 1985, which was actually pretty big. They also did Star Blazers.
Oh, Star Blazers. Love that show.
Yep. And there was also a Harlan Ellison graphic novel. And Dave Stevens, The Rocketeer, also made the lineup. And that's actually... The Rocketeer is an interesting book. So that's a nice indie comic that Dave Stevens did. And I think they refer to him as the Adam Hughes before Adam Hughes, because some of his covers were just gorgeous. And The Rocketeer is... You know, set in, I think it's the 30s? 20s or the 30s. Golden Age of Aviation. And it's credited with bringing back Betty Page's career, because he based the main character's girlfriend on her and drew her quite well in the book. And even though it didn't hit big, you know, Disney made the movie in 91 or 92, and I was reading somewhere actually this week that they're thinking about doing a remake or a sequel to it, to The Rocketeer.
That'll be interesting. I'm trying to think of other defunct publishers, and I get well defiant again, but I didn't read much of them, so.
Oh, here's an interesting thing on Comico. It said the mid-1986 decision to distribute to the newsstand market spelled the end of the comic company. So direct market didn't work for them.
Nope, didn't sound like it.
But others. I don't know if I can think up any others. I mean, from the 80s. Here's the thing. There were probably dozens of them, especially self-publishers that were just publishing books and all
right.
that. So there's probably some little gems out there, but a whole lot of trash.
Oh yeah.
As people were figuring out what they were doing.
Yeah. Because that's the thing, man. You know, indie comics really started. You know, if you take away the underground comics of the 60s and 70s, it was really the mid to late 80s when we really started getting indie comics started taking off and becoming a legitimate option for a lot of people.
All right, so that is our thoughts on First Comics, and I think we went off on a bunch of other comics.
Well, because Nick wanted to know about defunct publishers, so we kind of went off on that.
Let's see, next question. Somebody wants a review of Cal Exit 2.
Did Aaron put that in?
You know, that's
put that out there?
That's my... Yeah, so I actually, after hearing all the stuff on Black Mask, I actually bought Cal Exit 1 and enjoyed it. And, what, 6 months later, I'm still waiting on Cal Exit 2?
Yeah, in fact, I went off on a tirade on the Discord channel. I don't know if it was earlier today or yesterday. I can't remember. Where I said I was not going to buy another damn thing written by Matteo Pizzolo, who's the author of that. Because he also wrote Young Terrorist, which is a damn good book. But there was like 18 months between issue number one and issue number two. I don't know why he will not get anything out. I'm assuming it's his responsibility. I don't know if he's having problems with the artist. But it's like I'm sick of it. I'm not buying anything else because I liked Cal Exit 1. And I know Aaron did too.
Oh, Cal Exit 1 I thought was excellent. I was I'm intrigued to see where it goes. But whenever issue 2 comes out, I'm going to have to go back and reread issue 1 just to remember character names and what the hell's going on.
Yeah, I know. So, I don't know.
Yeah, so, anyway, our review of it is probably going to be excellent, but you're just going to be, you know, left frustrated because you want to get to issue 3, which will be another 18 months after you've just finished issue 3.
Page 11 was my favorite page out of issue number 2.
there you go. Page 11, panel 4.
That's genius, pure genius. So, I don't know.
All right, let's see. Next question. How glad are we that Liefeld isn't doing Fighting American anymore?
Is this another Aaron question? Is he just firing off crap at us?
No, I think that's a Ferret Tim
question. Okay. I'm happy that...
I don't even know what... I'm not even sure what Fighting American is, though.
So. But I'm happy that Liefeld's not doing it. I'm happy that Liefeld's not doing anything. A lot of things. So. Don't like his work.
I don't know. Back in the day, in the 90s, I don't know what it was, though. It was like him and like Stephen Platt and Porticio... And Lee and, you know, all your big, and McFarlane, all your 90s guys, your original Image guys, it was, you had to get the books they were on, because that was the art.
I guess so.
That was the thing to do. So. That's how you crash an industry.
Yep. All right, what next?
So, I don't know, I think that's all the questions we got. Do we have our own questions?
No. I know we can kind of wrap it up with talking about what we've been reading, I guess, the last couple, 3 weeks.
Okay, I'm trying to think. I've actually kind of gotten back on some Image books. Well, actually, for the past 3 weeks, I've kind of gone retro. And back in the day, I never read the full run of Sandman. So I've spent the past 3 or 4 weeks just reading all through that. And it's like, after you read that, you know, it's just, can anything else compare?
That's a good one.
That's the flagship Vertigo title. That was the, you know, granted it's a big two with DC, but it was supposed to be different, not mainstream, slow burn, get it out there, tell a story, and it's just still good. 30 years later? 20 years later? Is it 20 years?
Yeah.
Almost 30 years. So, I'm trying to think. I don't have my books in front of me, so...
Well, look, I know you read Kid Lobotomy, because we talked about it, so...
Yeah, I read Kid Lobotomy. I finished reading The Assignment from our case crime...
I read the number one issues for two Scout comics and didn't care for either of them. Graveland, Infernoct.
Yeah.
I won't go into them. Infernoct was kind of a horror fic, but nothing really happened. I may go ahead and get the second one because not much action happened in it. And then Graveland was sort of another post-apocalyptic story that has giants in it. So, but it didn't really interest me. The artwork didn't engage me at all. So, but that's it.
I read the second issue of Spiritus from Vault Comics and was thoroughly... Well, the story was fine, but I don't know about the art.
Art is really...
I don't know. I'm not too hung up on art and stuff, but it was hard for me to follow that story with the art.
Yeah. And specifically, it's the coloring that's really bizarre and really unusual, which I kind of liked the first issue. I haven't gotten the second one yet. So, but it's an intriguing, kind of an intriguing story, but yeah, the artwork is definitely different.
I think you'll have some comments after you read the second issue.
Okay. I'm sure I will. And that's been it. I mean, I've been reading a lot of... I've been trying to catch up on some DC stuff, specifically the Batman Metal or Dark Knight's Metal stuff. So I won't go into that here, but it's a lot of what I've been reading the last couple of weeks. Of which I find out they're going to delay that now. The last couple of issues are going to be delayed.
Are they?
Yes.
I think the big two, if you have an event, you have to have some delays in it. It's in the contract.
Well, that's what Aaron said. But I don't remember delays on other events, but I could have been sleeping when that happened.
Yeah, let's see. I'm trying to go through my list. Let me ask you this. This is kind of a little tangent on that, but how do you read your comics? What order do you do? How do you decide what you're going to read when you get your weekly stack?
Number one, I don't always read that stuff that week. Generally, I don't know. I'm more mood reading. Whatever just strikes my fancy. It's like, I'd rather read Detective Comics first. Or I don't have a plan Like, who is it that Nick was saying reads in alphabetical order? I forgot who he said now. I was doing that.
Yeah, alphabetical order. I thought that was interesting when I heard that.
I don't do anything, meticulous with it or anything like that. I just... I read it.
Do you have books that go to the top of the stack? It's like it comes out this week, I got to read the damn thing.
Normandy Gold is definitely one of them. When that comes out, that's one of my favorite, if not my favorite book coming out.
Oh, yeah. Issue 4 did come out like a couple of weeks ago, so I did read that too.
That one goes to the top. Generally, Batman and Detective Comics go to the top just because I want to. Batman, I read Batman now. I like this series. It's not my favorite run of Batman. But mostly when I'm reading Batman now, I'm thinking in the back of my head, oh, Martin's not going to like that. Martin's not going to like this. It's just...
You know what? And just to go off on a tangent again, we haven't even mentioned Aftershock.
That's true. We haven't.
On anything. And I'm enjoying most of their stuff. I think this past 3 or 4 weeks, Dark Arc 2 came out, which was really, really good. The Normals, I don't think I'm enjoying it as much as, I hear Martin and Ronnie enjoying it, but it's been a pretty good read. Animosity's pretty good, but...
I dropped Animosity.
It seems to be dragging. It's starting to drag a little.
I thought it was.
I don't read The Walking Dead, but is it kind of like The Walking Dead, where it's like every arc is running into some another enclave of animals, are humans, and at first they appear friendly and everything's good, but then you discover their dark secret and you have to escape.
Yeah, that's kind of like, it's kind of similar. It is. It really is.
So, you know what's interesting that I picked up the two issues in the past 3 weeks from Image is Angelus.
Oh, I haven't read that one.
Which is interesting because it seems to be, from what I can gather from the first two issues, say you've got a lot of animals that humans experimented on and gave implants to and up their intelligence, and then all the humans leave for whatever reason, some catastrophe, and all the animals are left to kind of develop their own little societies and religions and such, and then you come back 1,000 years later or whatever it is, and they're trying to figure out what happened to the humans.
Hmm. No.
It's interesting.
Sounds interesting.
But that's an Image, so I found that actually to be pretty good from Image. Paul recommended Green Valley to me, and I read it last night. That was actually pretty good.
Come on. That one again.
But I guess to get back to your reading order, because I was thinking, so here's how I read mine. So I get my stack of books, and I separate them out, and I do my Valiant stack and any gold key from Dynamite that I buy, and that goes into a pile. And then I get the Marvel Star Wars, because I'm really liking what Marvel's doing with Star Wars, and they go into a pile. And then I get all the independents. So anything that's not Big Two then goes, what's left goes into this stack. Image, Aftershock, Titan, whatever. All right? And then I get my DC, and then I do Marvel last. All right? So then I arrange the Marvel in the order I want to read it. So Marvel I do my X titles first, and then whatever else I'm getting comes after them. And then that goes bottom of the pile. And then I get my DC, and I start with my whatever events going on. Like right now it's Metal, and then I do Justice League, and then I do my Batman books, then I do my Superman books, then I do my Green Lantern books, and then I do whatever's left comes after them. And those go on top of the Marvel. And then I get my independents, and I order them, which ones I kind of said, ooh, I want to read this, I want to read that, and get them kind of in order. And then they go on top of the DC. And then I put the Marvel Star Wars, and then I get my Valiant. And then I got my pile, and I start working. So then I read my Valiant books, and I read the Marvel Star Wars books, and then I read my independents, and then I read my DC, and then I read my Marvel, and I'm done.
Gosh. I guess I might have to get a system here, you know, because I don't really do. You know, I actually used to try to put them in a certain order, and then I would always change it because I get to say, oh, I'm going to read this next, and I pick it up. Nah, I'm not in the mood to read that right now. So I'd go on to the next thing, and I'd read a couple more in the order, and then I would say, nah, I'm not ready for that right now. So I just decided to start going with it. It's like I just, okay, whatever strikes me fancy to read first, I do, and then next and next and next. So.
Yeah, and I usually try to read my weekly books within 24 to 36 hours of getting them.
Oh, I don't. Sometimes it's week. I've had books I've let go 2 or 3 weeks.
If I get the Sunday, I feel like I'm neglecting something.
Another reason I...
But I only probably get 20 books maybe a week. I don't get 20 books a week. I probably get 15 to 18 books a week. And that's even throwing in the random independence that we've been talking about.
Yeah. Now, one of the reasons I always read when the Batman comes out, I read it first. One of the reasons for that is because by the afternoon of the day it comes out, Ronnie's already DMing me with, what did you think about this? What did you think about that? So I have to read that one first to keep up so I can converse with him on it. So.
And then in the occasional, if I get the occasional trade or hardback book or something, then that kind of comes in last. Like Batman, the Dark Prince Charming from a week or two ago.
Which I got that. Thank you for sending that to me. I haven't read that yet.
So. Oh, yeah, because you couldn't find any of your local comic shows or comic shops.
I don't know why. It was sold out at my LCS.
Well, I think it got underordered because I saw some on eBay starting to go for $16, $20 a couple of days after it came out.
Yeah. I got that yesterday. I haven't picked it up yet. I'll try to do that later this week. Just what I've seen of the art, the art really looks engaging on that one.
The art looks good. I had to get over the Joker makeup at first, but it works for me. You got your typical Harley Quinn. But
of course.
I mean, it's a Batman story, and it's actually pretty good, and the art and the layout's kind of is great. So we'll see where it goes. I think a lot of people, it's still not as good as White Knight.
Oh, nothing right now. Batman related is as good as White Knight, in my opinion. That story is.
It's only two issues.
I don't care. It is superb. I really liked what Sean Murphy's one of my favorite.
Can you see? And that's not a canon Batman story.
No, it's not.
That's an outside continuity Batman story where it's a totally different character, but it's not being rammed down our throat like people accuse Marvel of doing.
Oh, well, I've said, and it's true, that several of my all-time favorite Batman stories were either Elseworld or out of continuity. I mean, And I think that's part of what I like about White Knight is it's refreshing because it is not. You don't have to stay within color within the lines. You know, Sean Murphy can do what he's doing. You know, reverse the roles. You know, make Napier the Joker the protagonist, the good guy here, or supposedly, as we're seeing it. So you can play with things. And I like that. That's why I think, some of the Elseworld stories have been Batman stories have been some of the best.
Well, that's because, again, they're a story with a beginning, a middle, and an end. There's consequences, and the character usually at the end is not what you started out with and doesn't have to be put back in the toy box the same way they started out with as they have been for the past 50
right.
years. That's why I think Elseworld stories work.
I agree. Anyway.
And I guess with that, we've come full circle.
Yeah, I was just about an hour and a half in. So. Apologies for that abrupt ending there. Our recorder cut off before we could do our final sign out. But we hope you enjoyed this episode of Answering Listener Questions. If you'd like to contact us, Dennis can be reached on Twitter at @UTENGR. I can be reached at @JForgets. Or you can tweet the show at @BOTRComics. We'll be back soon with another episode. Till then, take care.